Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking alfalfa weevil and some pests we're seeing out in the field. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at a new biotech trait designed to take a bite out of SCN. Egg History Minute, we'll talk Greek yogurt and what makes that different from regular yogurt. We'll have our second JDM challenge this week. Cool Beans, That's Corny for some current events, and we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today is Todd Schomburg.
Hey, all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. It's just two of us. I could say both instead of all, but just so
you know. Both works.
Yeah, both do work.
So, man, are you excited about the new roundabout in town?
Been through it a couple times. It's a roundabout. I am surprised because that always was two lanes through there.
Yeah,
now
I mean,
it's one lane.
It seems very narrow. No middle thingy, you know, no fancy. You can just drive through it.
We were debating that in our family, like, if they're going to put a big hamburger statue.
Yep.
Because it's round and hamburgers are round.
That would be perfect.
Like, just...
Because it's a big time to see.
Oneida's got the turtles. Yes. And their roundabout. We thought we could maybe have a hamburger in ours or something. But yeah, no, it is...
It is the most plain, simple roundabout I have ever seen. Just
for the amount of time it took them,
yes.
Like, and for all of the roundabouts, yes, it is very plain. Plain Jane. But I'm imagining they did that because of farm equipment, because there's a fair amount of farm equipment that goes through there. And
they were looking for semis and for... I mean, yeah. It's already, like, full of blackies.
Sure.
Like, some of it looked like people messing around, but some look like semis that you got to make that...
Because other ones, you always got to kind of like go up on this the side of the hill that's in the middle or whatever to ride through. So
I think you could, if you got fast enough, it's a little bit of a lip. You could jump. You just go straight through, jump it, and then kind of like that guy did that roundabout in Appleton. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Jumped the.
Yeah.
This one has like jumping capabilities potentially, man.
Well, and we're going to have another one soon. Well,
yeah, so the stoplight's officially gone, so, yeah, sir.
The one stoplight we had in town.
Yeah, that was a sad day for Seymour. Second to place to when we lost our Dollar General. That was a...
Which is now a lot of parts.
Just we need more.
So at least it did get reused.
Yes, good point. But how many places are losing Dollar General?
They're going up everywhere.
They're everywhere.
They're like quick trips.
Yes. I'd say even more shock. Like, here's a place that would shock you. Well, one, like in Embarrass, Wisconsin.
They have a Dollar General. Yeah, I've been through there, yeah.
And then the one that got me is a, I don't know if it's technically Pine River or Saxville.
Oh, really? I'm there now, too.
You know that, like, stop where there's somebody, like, selling honey to the side, and there's a church.
Yeah, and isn't there, like, a pickle sign or something? Or something that talks about pickles in that same intersection?
Right.
Yeah.
You know what intersection
I'm talking about? I know what you're talking about.
And they have a Dollar General there now.
Wow.
Like, I don't know how or why. Or...
I mean, we did have a dollar store before Dollar General moved in.
And true.
That was part of it.
There's still another family dollar.
You're right. Yeah, we still have the family dollar store.
We still have the dollar stores, so good point. But, yes, I just shocked it.
Not that we're any strangers to redundancies in this town, because we have a couple auto parts stores, like four gas stations, only one grocery store, technically. I mean, Quick Trip is half a grocery store, half a gas station. So, yeah, I mean, it is interesting the things that we have multiples of that work and the things that we can't handle multiples of. So,
yes, I mean, Saxville... Telling them, Sherrod County, 974 people in the 2000 census, and has a Crossroads Cafe and a Dollar General, across the road. It's big time.
Well, I mean, they are really not close to anything.
Well, it's literally in the middle of, can get to a Packer, but it's away, you know, you're just...
So probably six of the 900 people do a majority of their shopping at the Dollar General now.
I think Wild Rose has a Dollar General just down the street, too. They've got a Family Dollar.
So I just drove through there. I can't remember if there was one or not. But
so, yes, that's...
No. Interesting.
How many times did you go around the roundabout?
Until I saw
did you make
traffic.
Laps?
Yeah.
Yep. Yep, I did a couple of those with the kids. They enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was interesting. I wasn't sure what to expect when it finally did open. Like, you know, it saw the progress from a distance because everything was closed through there. And yeah, like you said, it was very plain, very, very unimpressive for roundabouts. Like, if this was, what are we talking, 15 years ago when roundabouts were like a new thing and everybody's like, what is this thing? Why are we doing this?
I remember like when the pier, it was like right when we were getting our licenses. I remember we specifically had to drive to a place so that they could show us how to go
around. Yeah. So at that time, this would have been much more impressive. Yeah. Like, whoa, what is this thing?
Yeah, first to get our first one, that's pretty wild. Like, we got a long way to catch up to Hubbard, Swamico, or DePere, or
Green Bay.
Yeah.
The corridor of, like, the triple roundabout, like 41.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But we will have a double roundabout soon, so.
Did you know Wisconsin has the most roundabouts of any state?
Really? Did not know that. So we are the roundabout capital of the United States.
So we're finally joining the party.
I feel like Minnesota probably has more diverging diamonds than we do.
True.
Because just from being in Minneapolis not that long ago, I remember seeing a few of those, and we just got our first one a few years ago. Because there's one in Appleton. Maybe there's more now. I've only gone through the one in Appleton, but... Or I guess technically, is that Menasha?
That area is all the same to me.
Yeah.
Because you got
Grand Chute, which my father always refers to as Big Bang and Little Bang.
Okay.
Just shoot. But, that is very, because you have Fox Crossing now, too, like Needham and Asha, Fox Crossing, Appleton, Grand Chute. Little Chute is a little more separated, but yeah, it's just kind of a...
Yes, that is very same to me.
Yeah, very...
That's all Appleton to me.
Right.
But yes, I agree, they're different.
So I asked this question knowing the answer because I saw you, but did you get to Breakfast on the Farm last
weekend? Yes, it was a great... Breakfast on the Farms, if the weather's great, they're always pretty great.
Yeah, it was a little breezy.
Yeah, it got like...
I was in the shade, which was a little...
No, in the sun it was almost too hot, and in the shade it was cold. And yes, and you had, you know, the booth there, your stuff's blown around, and it's just a little bit more tricky.
Yeah, thankfully it wasn't... But the last half hour, the wind really picked up and knocked some stuff over, and I kind of had to make changes, but I was prepared... Found a couple rocks outside to put over papers so they wouldn't blow away.
Good turnout. Good breakfast on the farm. You know, still got a lot to go over here, so we only have 3 minutes. Yep. So just try to get to wherever you can. It seems Alpacas is Father's Day, and Kiwani
is this weekend too. Yeah.
So there's still some options out there to go check them out.
Was Shano's brunch already, or is that?
I think that's coming up too.
Yeah, that one. That one's always interesting because it's the brunch on the farm. Like, there's always the few that are a little bit different. Like, Calumet County does their Sundays on a farm. But it's the same general concept. It's to get people out in touch with agriculture. You get a good breakfast. The Manderfield's cinnamon rolls were delicious as normal. I know a couple people I talked to that ate on the early side, they were a little frozen yet, but...
That maybe was... Because my kids didn't eat them, which I was I thought they'd eat that first, so that was just weird. You know, I'm like...
Yeah, the one I had was great.
And I ate the first one, they were good.
Yeah, no surprises, I guess, really, as far as breakfast, it was...
Surprise of, like, got rain, some rain the day before, and the parking lot was, like, perfectly dry.
Yeah.
Which is pretty awesome. It was
the hayfield was just harvested the day before that.
Yeah,
so
it was, that was perfect.
The plants were ready to take that moisture up, probably, so... the farm looked real nice. They had some music, some farm tours.
It was the Reagan Lane farm tours, and...
Yeah.
Bounce house that was full of kids.
Is it? Yeah.
Yes.
I think quite a bit of that fire.
Literally, posted rate of 8 kids. And
they were double, triple of that.
Oh yeah, there was a good amount, some tackling going on. If you were under the age of about three, you pretty much had to just go in and go out, I think. But yeah.
But yeah, it's always a good time. Enjoyed the day out talking to both the public, and that's kind of the neat thing about Breakfast on the Farm, is you get the general public and you get other farmers. And
that's a good point, is it does, you know, you go to the farm show.
WPS Farm Show.
WPS Farm Show. That's mostly, there's some people from rural areas that maybe are hobby farms or something like that, but it's in general, it's farmers.
Yeah.
And it's not just general public and Dairy Expo and all those farm shows, tech days. But you're right, Breakfast on the Farm is a good meld of a lot of farmers come out to both help volunteer and, you know, go to the breakfast. And a lot of people, you know, obviously hopefully bringing out more of the urban area people to come out and check it out.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it was good weekend for that. And hopefully this weekend carries through. It'll be a little warmer this weekend than it was last weekend, but at least hopefully that'll mean people can still come out and enjoy it. So, yeah, you ready to get into our
topic? Yeah, let's talk weevils.
Weevils wobble, but they don't fall down. Is that how it goes?
Yes, it is.
Wasn't that there's a game. Weebles, I think it was, not Weebles. Yeah.
I remember the saying. I don't remember the game.
Yeah, I feel like there's a game.
I think you're right. And just like,
I'm just trying to, because it was like this bug, and then you'd like pull the legs out, and that's why they were wobbly.
Sounds Weeble. Yeah, Weeble. Oh, Weeble's those little like,
yeah, there's like little figurines.
Yeah,
too.
Okay.
But yeah, there was a game I distinctly remember where you pulled the legs off like a bug.
So yeah, talking weevils today, just hopefully most people are, I know there's still some first crop out there, but in general people are finishing up, and some farms are even ready to start second crop.
Yeah.
Or already harvesting that, so it's
one of those years where it's like the continuous cycle of hay just keeps moving.
Going off, and so I was going to talk leafhopper, but one thing that happens with leafhopper a lot of times when you cut like that and have this cycle of hay is, those are moving around.
Yep.
So leafhopper, a lot of times, it'd be like, you're almost seeing that threshold, because by the time, the hay maybe is half height and the neighbor, say, cut. Say you're the first to cut, or your leafhopper leave in general.
Yep.
And they infest somebody else, and then say, a week or two when they cut, they come back to you, and those people may have to spray. So your first cut guys with leafhopper,
sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to spray. Sometimes both sides have to spray. You just got to sweep them. But weevils cannot do that in general. I mean, the grass could move, but the actual weevil worm, isn't gonna go across the road once you cut. So
they're not like army worm where they just march.
Right. Good point. That would be quite the march of.
Yeah, march of the weevils.
Yeah. I still think it'd be interesting to try to find out how many weevils get harvested, but I swear there's times where the protein levels in some of these feed samples I see are higher than you'd expect, that
because of the weevil population.
Like, yeah, is there weevils in here? What's going on? And even like now with the way, you don't want to knock the leaves off of the plants, so you usually kind of pick it up with a merger and a little more gentle with it. But depending on the time of day you cut too, sometimes I think some of those weevils are down just in the soil, and you may not pick them up, but some of the times they're in that windrow of hay, just kind of munching along, and then you do pick them up. So I did see a couple of tedders out going this year, and people trying tedders to dry the hay out quicker. I don't know if that, too, will be better or worse, or maybe it'll kill them, but
it's been a year for everything in hay
fields. Oh, yes.
I mean, if you were trying to make dry hay first crop, good luck to you. I mean,
it was just almost so thick, too, that it didn't dry. But there was a couple of days where it didn't seem to dry like it should, and then there's days where it dried faster, and then you'd get the field itself to be dry.
Yeah, there was alfalfa for days. As late as some guys got cutting. And obviously there's quality implications with that, but it didn't drop as fast as kind of thought it would.
Right.
The year we're having, so.
The flowers kind of held off longer than you'd think, but by the end there was getting a lot of flowers in the bottom that Sims dropping leaves and, you know, just getting poor quality that way. But in general when we thought we were going to go May 15th and, you know, we're talking almost
June 15th
and it was like we were weeks behind what you kind of expected to start.
But it did leave an ample food source for the weevils to get going, because we were seeing weevil damage before cutting.
Right.
Which normally with first crop, you know, we don't necessarily see much for bugs until after the cutting's done.
Right. So looking up other states, so if you're kind of in the Midwest, in the kind of southern part of the Midwest, this is more like, say, Missouri, that area, this is more of a first crop problem.
Yep.
That you're going to have weevils kind of popping out that you're going to have to take care of in your first crop. In Wisconsin, in where it was at, in some of those states, they just said, you don't even deal with it in second crop. Like, they'll go away, or it's not even a thing.
Sure. They've harvested them all for protein.
Probably, yes. So then kind of the northern Midwest states, Minnesota, Wisconsin, there was more of a talk of, in the second cut, you got to watch weevils, and they can be there. So they can be a problem that can be in first crop or second crop. You kind of got to watch. And what is that is I've seen them heavy in first crop, and then some of the thresholds you just cut early.
Yep.
And we've seen cutting take care of them, especially if you get like hot days where that sun just seems to bake them and dry them up.
Well, and to apply insecticide, you have waiting periods for harvest. So if you get within that last 2 weeks before a cut, then it's a really hard decision because you need the window to spray, which lately has been difficult to find between the rain and the wind, which we're not... I don't want to talk ill of the wind because the wind has been helping dry stuff out so guys can get back in the fields, but from a spraying perspective, it's made things challenging.
Yes.
So, it becomes a hard decision at that point because you don't want to have to wait longer, especially the way this year's been going, to have to do your cutting. So, yeah, there's a balancing act of how to treat.
So then as it greens up, there's one thing to watch is in that windrow, there's always, you can have these bare strips where, if you windrowed a bunch of hay together and then all of them did shake free, they're all in that one spot just feeding. So that can be a problem that, from the road, it may look like track damage, but you get in the field and you can kind of tell the difference because obviously there's not a track there and there's no hay. So that's one spot to really watch where they're coming back. The other thing to watch is the size of them. It can be tricky too, is if you get a bunch of little ones and you know they're going to be there for the whole cutting, maybe something that you do want to treat earlier so you don't have a whole bunch of problems. But what is interesting about the threshold, as I was looking at other states' thresholds, is Wisconsin's threshold is a percent of stems with feeding.
Yep.
So not a percent of feeding, it's a percent of stems that have some feeding. And typically it's around 40% is the threshold that they use for that. In other states, actually, you take 50 stems and you get a 5-gallon bucket and you shake them all in that bucket.
Okay.
And then you count the number of
weevils?
Of weevils, yes. So
don't sweep, instead of sweeping them and going off of those numbers.
Well, sweeping them is always hard from that number because it just seems like you can get different.
Well, yeah,
you think that would be able to be calibrated, though, somehow.
Yeah. Weevil and leafhopper can be tricky because you can get hot spots where they're heavier in one area and not as heavy in another.
And in this idea where you shake it in a bucket, if you picked from that hot spot,
you're going to have a buttload of them in there.
You have more. So I just thought that was, Minnesota uses economic threshold, and it's based on hay value, and it's the average larvae per stem. So if you get, these 50 stems, and because that's how they count these, are they going to looking real close on the stem and trying to find them all? And no, they basically shake it in this bucket, count them, and then sort of the treatment level seems to be around one for the treatment, around one to two, because they got a scale too of the hay value and the treatment cost, and then my height as well. So
sure.
If it's over 20 inches, it's basically like just mow early. If it's like 10 to 15 inches, then like I said, it's around that 2 larvae per stem. So actually that was a really neat way to do that. I was trying to think if you could somehow calibrate it to like the stem count of the hay plus the like a sweep. If you should, or even just do say one sweep across, is that gonna? But that would be more than one stem. I don't know. The bucket thing is interesting. We'll have to try it this week and see what we think of the bucket way of doing it. So,
yeah, I guess In my mind, I'm picturing you like walking through the field, just clipping one stem every so often until you get to 50.
Right.
Because if you do like a scissor clip style where you just pick an area and clip 50 stems, then you're really chancing running into just like a particular hot spot that, yeah, maybe this area was heavy and it you'd have to do that multiple times across the field to try to be consistent. It's interesting. Never done it that way, so yeah, it's interesting to think about how you would.
And Minnesota said they called it tip injury, so that's like what Wisconsin's based on, is that injury of feeding.
Yep.
They said it works well pre-harvest, but then when it's later, say in second crop green up or at certain heights, that doesn't work as good, because like I said, you're waiting then for there to be X amount of damage. Well, then you got to get the sprayer out there and all that. But so yeah, I thought, and they want 50 to 100 alfalfa stems, and it's 10 to 20 randomly selected from 5 locations is what Minnesota wants. Iowa also uses, so Iowa State also uses the bucket, and they want 30 to 50 stems just from different areas, and shake them in a 5-gallon bucket to dislodge them. And there's they just updated their table for weevils. So I was trying to compare it to the old one to see what they changed, and with not being used to how this even works, it looked pretty much the same to me. But yeah, basically they've got the number of weevils in this bucket and then correlated to cost
height.
And
height and cost, yeah, it's interesting.
I thought this was some of these thresholds that other states use always boggle me, how we could be the same bug state of, we're literally touching states and do it very different. So that we could, even for soybean aphid, I know there's way different thresholds, different states. In general, I guess the 250 is pretty common, but.
Yeah, well, the length of your growing season is different. There's other considerations. We're on the short end of that stick when it comes to, growing season, growing degree days. Our windows are different than Missouri, in particular, even Iowa, even Minnesota, when you really look at it. And there's...
Yeah, because we got the lakes and the different... It's just different. But yeah, Minnesota does kind of do both. They do the Wisconsin way if you want, where you check in if there's this 35 to 40% of these feeding on the tips, like they call it, or the bucket method of trying to, or the larvae per stem method. So
do your choice.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Fair enough.
One of the other notes that I heard from some co-op guys and thought it was interesting, but there's been in Minnesota, kind of had it in their crop news, but that there's possibly pyrethroid resistant
weevils.
Really? Yes. Hmm. So some co-op guys kind of brought up to me, I'll put it this way, is this year I got the question of what do you want to spray? What do you have? And, we got Warrior, Mustang, Max, I didn't have an opinion on it. And they brought up to me, we've been hearing about resistance. So I said, okay, in the Minnesota Crop News, they found in 2022, it says many reports came from Western Minnesota and other part of the state of pyrethroid failures for alfalfa weevil control. So some of these reports may have been application issues, poorly timed applications, improper rates, lack of coverage. But they said, however, the volume of the reports kind of makes it more, that they suspect there could be resistance. So they're kind of still, from what I can tell, are still somewhat on their way determining if it's resistance or not. But yeah, that was an interesting thing to me too, something to watch out for. What I struggled with that is like, you could get another generation coming, because there's a lot of things going on here that would be tricky to know if it's resistant or not, or if, like it says that it was the time, it was the application, but you know, some of these, they're way at the base of the plant, you know, harder to get the dose of it, especially if you think of like doing it with the first crop, it's real thick, whereas it's shorter, it's different. So what do you think of that? Have you seen any news on that, or what's your thoughts?
I haven't, but I just kind of looked it up quick while we were talking, and I did find a study from earlier this year that says, it's an abstract from February 2024, where they are finding resistance in Western states. So it looks like 6 Western states, they seem to have resistance, and it was Arizona, California, Montana, Oregon, Washington, and Wyoming. So when I say Western, not Midwestern, it's Western, all the way to the West Coast type thing, in Egyptian and Western strains.
Okay.
So I guess I don't know.
I didn't know there were strains.
There were strains of weeds. I mean, we just...
So, that's great. Well, maybe it could be just weevil, you know. Yeah, there's obviously a bunch of different weevils. But, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, so there's something to that, I guess, as far as that goes. But I guess it hasn't officially been recorded close to our area. It seems more out west than, I'd have to do more research to find out if we have either of those strains here, or if it's what kind of weevils we have here in Wisconsin. But it is one thing I think we, through IPM and other things, do manage our insecticides better in alfalfa than...
Think of alfalfa, like there's been a couple of years here we haven't had to spray it at all.
Yep.
And then there's certain timings where I get really... The hardest time you have is those guys who do cut first... in first crop, because then they get to say half threshold of weevil, and then they have to half or three quarter threshold of potato leaf hopper, and you just got a mixed bag. We were in Winfield this week that the guys found a bunch of aphids and were kind of shocked. Yeah, I had to like just like say it again. No, there was quite a few, it wasn't threshold, but you just get this combination of effect too. It's tricky, you know, it takes some thinking through of.
Yep.
How to handle that, and not that I know of other thresholds, cumulative that way.
I will say I've seen a lot of ladybugs, especially in wheat fields, so it would make sense that the aphid populations are higher because they feed on aphids, so having higher ladybug populations meaning that they're coming for the food source.
Yep.
So that tracks in my mind, I guess. So yeah, it's an interesting thing that, yeah, like you said, we've had years where we don't even think about spraying because they're nowhere near threshold. Weevils seem to be tricky in timing with, you know, different years, different amounts of heat we get. Like this year we had a very mild winter, so we expect a lot. I expected a lot more insect activity this spring. And I'm not going to say we didn't have enough because there have been armyworm issues in places.
And slugs and everything else. So I agree, but it hasn't been the... sort of
even it's not like 2012 when we had
right.
apocalypse in our fields. We were sweeping like what are these things?
That was the ready to cut worm thing.
Yeah, we're like, I don't know what this is. Yeah. Like Brian Jensen, please help me.
Yes.
So
yeah, that's the kind of deep dive in weevil and what the news of them are and how to hopefully manage them on your farm.
And I can confirm both are out there. I'm sweeping. I've seen leaf hopper, I've seen weevil. And it is something that has to be tracked week to week. I mean, it's not like you can just go out there once and be like, nope, we're good. I didn't find any this week, so we're good. It does take a little bit more intensive monitoring that way to keep eye on populations and buildings. So. If you're concerned, you're seeing something in the field that doesn't quite look right, like maybe the hay doesn't come back as fast, it's never a bad time to go out and check for weevil leafhopper. Make sure you're scouting those hay fields or having someone scout the hay fields and watch for those populations. So Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. This, I am kind of excited about this. New biotech trait designed to take the bite out of SCN, coming from BASF. The soybean cyst nematode, as we've talked before on the podcast, takes a huge bite out of U.S. farmer soybean yield potential and profitability to the tune of about $1.1 billion, with a B, in losses each year. Pest routinely reduces yields in affected fields by at least 5 bushel, and often more per acre, according to Crop Protection Network. So now BASF has announced it developed an innovative tool called Nemasphere that company leaders expect will eventually become the new standard for nematode management. Nemasphere is the first ever biotech trait designed to address SCN. According to Mike McCarville, trait development manager for BASF, he says the trait produces a novel Cry14 protein that, when ingested by nematodes, interferes with nutrient uptake in their intestines, leading to nematode death. McCarville says Nemasphere will be stacked with Enlist 3 technology and will be available in full range of top-performing and best-yielding soybean varieties, allowing farmers unmatched SCN resistance without compromising yield potential. The first soybean varieties expected with Nemasphere be available to plant in 2028, pending regulatory approval. So, I'm excited.
This is awesome news because we've got, there's other tools in the toolbox with, you know, that the PEI 88788 and the peaking resistance kind of that are bred into the plants, and we've got other sort of nematicides we can use in products.
Yeah.
This would be another really nice tool. So this also coincides with Cool Bean. So Sean Conley last year around now tweeted that in cornfields at this time, you could actually be taking the test. You get 4 free tests for soybean cyst nematode through the Oregon. I don't know that they released that, but in past years, through Wisconsin's soybean board. So maybe your state might be different, but so this is a bad time in corn to actually take that test, and it'll give you corn nematodes as well as if that field's going to grow soybean next year. Obviously, it's a field that plans soybeans for the following year. You could see what the plan is for, you know, how bad your nematodes are, and plan accordingly that way. So
yep.
I think this this having object 2028 though seems like forever from now, plus pending approval, but at least there's something coming down the pipeline to address, because I think this is a huge hidden problem. We've talked about soybean cyst a bunch. So
yeah, no, it's definitely an issue, and the development cycle on things like this is very long, so it's good to see, you know, we can see the light at the end of the tunnel now. But before when we were first talking about resistance and stuff, it was like, okay, but what are we going to do?
Well, it was like rotate out of soybeans for 10 years. That was the plan.
Which is very easy to do.
Nobody would have any issues. What's laughable about that is most of the guys that had issues grow soybeans quite often.
Right.
You know, especially ones that had a ton of issues with beans like 10 years in a row, which then, yes, rotate at least some. But, yeah, so, like, your option, yes, was plant a different crop. So we're getting a lot more options here, which is exciting.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Now we'll move into our ag history map. So how is Greek yogurt different than regular yogurt? Well, both Greek and regular yogurt are fermented. The process starts out the same. Bacteria called Lactobacillus bulgaricus and Streptococcus thermophilus are added to warm milk. During this time, the bacteria convert lactose, which is the naturally occurring sugar in milk, into lactic acid. This gives the mixture a thick, creamy texture and slightly tart flavor. For regular yogurt, this is where the process stops. But for Greek yogurt, there's one more step. The makers of Greek yogurt then strain regular yogurt to remove whey and other liquids. This leaves a slightly thicker and more tart yogurt to be consumed. And so that you can talk about the health benefits or taste differences, what have you, of Greek yogurt over regular yogurt. Both have the benefit of being a natural source of probiotic bacteria for your guts and can be healthy to consume those yogurts. But this leads us into our second JDM challenge this week. So, Todd, what do you got for us?
Yeah, they've been sitting here getting nice and warm, which is great. No, got some Greek yogurts, in one regular yogurt, so you can try to see which is different here. If you can
visually, I think I've got that that nailed down. But
pretty easy to tell your Greeks from your non-Greeks. So,
whoa, can we say that?
We're talking yogurts.
Oh, okay.
Right. Well, I think we're actually supposed to say Greek style is the proper. Some countries, they're actually called strain yogurt. So there's a bunch of other names.
Does it say in Greece, do they just call it yogurt?
Yogurt then? I think yeah. So. Yes. It's like the French toast in France. It's just toast, right? When you were there, did you have their toast?
Yes. That's still a little different.
But. Okay. But yeah, there's strain yogurt. Is another name for Greek yogurt cheese, which made me laugh because I thought yogurt cheese was quite an unusual name. There is sack yogurt and curdled yogurt, which all sound kind of gross to me. That the curdled yogurt sounds, yeah, really gross.
Curdled is not
no,
really.
No, curdled, which is curdled like a kernel of corn.
Interesting.
So, yes. And basically, like we said, it's strained to remove the whey. Just resulting in thicker consistency. So I got five of them in front of me here. We've got some, all kinds of different fun ones. So they find that we've got a Fage Best Self, a Danon Light.
I think it's Fage.
Yeah, how do you say that?
I only know that because of the commercials.
Okay. How do you say it?
Fage, I believe, Fage. Is how it's, yeah.
It's F-A-G-E.
Fage.
Yes.
With Father's Day coming up, with your Fage. Fage. Yeah. Think of Austin Powers. Fage. Get your Fage out some yogurt. He prefers the Fage.
We got this one, right? Oikos?
Yeah, that one I think is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not Oikos or. And then Chobani, Greek yogurt, and Danon Light and Fit. And then there's just like Yoplait original. To be like the. Yes, the. I don't know, the kind of. Plain, when you think of like yogurt, the Yoplait.
Yeah, Yoplait is a pretty good
kind of
yogurt.
Yeah, I mean, it's just got a lot of the section. What is crazy is how much of the section now is all the other ones. So, yeah. So, number one, if you want to try that one, Matt.
Okay.
Do you like your fruit on the bottom, or do you like it blended?
I usually mix it up.
Because this first one was like a blended. So some of them were fruit on the bottom that I had to like mix around. But this one was already blended.
I always find with Greek yogurts that you kind of have to mix them up anyway.
Oh, because they get like, they're too thick?
Yeah, like the thickness, it kind of gets like a, it's not like a soup skin, but like a.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It gets a kind of like.
When I first opened them, they look really gross.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the liquid kind of gets in there, and then you just kind of stir it up, and then it's kind of like sour cream that way. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Usually when it's fresh and opened, you kind of mix it up a little bit, but then after that, you always have to mix it because the liquid kind of separates.
So this one is from milk from family-owned farms.
From?
It says it right on the container.
Interesting.
And I should say, they're all strawberry yogurts. I don't know what you're... to me, like, plain yogurt's gross with no... flavoring.
Yep.
And then I was going to do vanilla, but there wasn't enough, like, different choices.
And vanilla can be a weird yogurt flavor.
Yeah.
Like it's
I mean, I like vanilla yogurt, but there is some that are weird.
It's not like vanilla ice cream. Like when it,
yes.
Like when you go for vanilla yogurt, if you're expecting vanilla ice cream flavor, it's not.
They're different.
Yeah.
But yes, so I was trying to decide what the vanilla flavor is of yogurts, and it felt like strawberry was the most common across brand. I mean, you got strawberry, banana, mixed berry. There's all kinds of them, but this was the most.
Sure.
So yeah, this one, what do you think of this one?
Yeah, it's good. It's not very tart. It is sweeter, and whether that's the fruit mixed in, or if they have maybe a little more added sugar to it.
This one's got 12 grams of sugar, which when we get to later, only like 6 grams. So
yeah, it definitely has a little bit sweeter taste to it, so.
So that's the Oikos brand.
Oikos soup. Is that... No. Is that Dannon? Which one's Dannon?
Oh, does Dannon own Oikos?
Yeah. They own one of them, I think.
You're probably right. Yeah, I forgot about that. Does not say on the container.
There's one of them, I think, is Dannon. Yeah, I can't remember which one.
So the next one is a strawberry on the bottom.
Okay.
So I mixed it, obviously. I didn't just give you the top or the bottom, but I mixed it around.
You only get the bottom fruit.
Yes. So...
Just taking a sip of water there to cleanse the palate. Yeah, this one's not as sweet.
This one's more Greek-y. Yeah, this is like full on, like got that sour kind of taste. What's odd is it has more sugar than the one before.
Really?
Yeah.
The style of it must be.
Right. Just make it, serving size the same, 150 grams. So this one was 14 grams, the last one had 12.
Okay.
So it is using, it says no fake fruit, which I don't know who's using fake fruit, but this one says authentically crafted no fake fruit.
Okay.
So, yes. So maybe they use like a fruit sugar or something?
I was going to say, sometimes it's on the label. It's the 14 grams of sugar. Counting the sugar of the fruit.
It says added sugar. 14 grams and 9 grams added.
Added, okay.
And then the other, that's a good point. The other one was only 7 grams added.
Okay.
So
both are pretty close to this.
So this one is the Chobani.
Chobani.
Yep, Chobani fruit and bottom. Good, good, decent little bit. Like you say, it was more...
It had the Greek tartness to it, as opposed to the Oikos was a little bit more sweet. All right, what do we got? Number three next here. And I would say color-wise, because they all have a pinkish hue, because they're all strawberry.
So sometimes...
Like this one seems a little bit more pink.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I don't know which one's included, like extra coloring and all that junk, but...
Yeah, this one also not as sweet. Almost has a different, like a little bit of a different aftertaste to it. I can't quite place it. It's familiar, but not.
Part of it's probably, so this one is the least sugar, and this one is the 6-gram one with only 1 gram added. So basically it's just strawberries with a hint of sugar. Kind of your... So this is the Dannon Light and Fit.
Okay.
So it's got, it's trying to have, I think there's less sugar is what they're going for.
Yeah, and I would say it shows. Like, this one is definitely less sweet than the other two.
Yeah, it's actually not as, like you said, it's just a weird aftertaste is the only thing. Oh, that's good.
Though I don't feel any lighter or fitter after having consumed it, no. Maybe it takes a little bit to kick in.
It says right on the side, 80 calories, high protein, full flavor. Light and Fit and our partners are dedicated to empowering women.
Ooh. So are we not supposed to eat this yogurt then? Is it meant for women only?
Doesn't say anything.
Seems sexist.
Else. Well, this is part of the Dannon. Dannon.
That is Dannon,
Dannon. So, Oikos is owned by Dannon. So
okay, that's right.
That must be the more Greek-y one. And
this right, that's like full Greek versus this is health yogurt.
Yep.
I guess.
All right, so that's
a category.
Four.
Yeah, so number
you had to mix the fruit into this one.
To say, there doesn't seem much color. Like, you can see the white yogurt, like the typical uncolored, unflavored white yogurt.
This one may be hard because you might get... I tried mixing as well as I could, but it did not mix very well, so...
This one's got more of a texture to it, I don't want to say... It's not grainy.
It sounds like sour creamy.
But it's got a different...
But this one's 12 grams of sugar, kind of like the rest of them. Same amount of same amount of protein, and it was the most expensive.
Okay, so it's the Faye.
Yep.
Yeah,
Faye.
Well, it's good. I think I would eat this one over the Light and Fit. Like, it seems to have a better flavor.
It had a really cool, like container for, it was just like strawberry jelly on one side.
Sure.
So they had like a container where one side is got this.
Yeah, flip it in.
And then you like flip it in, yeah.
Yep.
So it was, yep, Greek strain yogurt.
Ooh, they even mentioned the straining process on the packaging.
Can you just take regular yogurt and just strain it more and make your own Greek?
I wouldn't see why not. Because they make, like, we have a Instapot, and it has a yogurt setting, which I've never used. But you could, like, make your own yogurt with it. So, I wonder if you were to just, like, make your own yogurt and then strain it, if you would get a Greek yogurt or if you would just get spoiled yogurt.
It has a yogurt setting.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep. Yeah, you can make yogurt with it. I think you have to buy, like, an enzyme or something that you put in.
Probably the lactose, whatever.
Lactobacillus and Streptococcus.
Yep. Cool.
But, yeah.
Have you made it?
I've never done it. I just know what's on there. So it's got, I don't know, you have Instapot, you know what it is, you know what I'm talking about?
We don't have one, but it's like a,
you can use it like a crock pot, but it's also a pressure cooker.
Yes.
Like, you can, it seals and you can build pressure, and so you can make things, like, it speeds up the cooking process of certain things because of the ability to
I've seen the infomercials.
Yeah.
It was sweet.
Yeah, we bought one because one of my college roommates actually they had one, loved it. They made like
yogurt,
not yogurt. No.
In your college dorm, just making
we made a lot of things in our college dorm. Yogurt was not one of them, not intentionally anyway. I'm sure some yogurt got made in some college dorms. It wasn't on purpose.
No,
I'm not gonna guarantee it was only lactobacillus or streptococcus that was in there, but yeah, no. I've always kind of been interested in trying it, but I've never done it. So, and I imagine what we're left with, number five here, is the Yoplait.
I think I did this on purpose just to make it, like, it just is almost like, it's like if you had whole milk or 2% and then switched to skim. So this is the regular Yoplait, non-Greek, and it almost like, when you go to that, then it tastes like, this is like liquidy, and just very different. So,
Well, yeah, my kids love Go-Gurts.
Yeah, Go-Gurt, yeah.
You know, to have that consistency where you just squeeze it out, it's got to be that liquidy. I would say, for me anyway, the first one and this one are closest in taste. Not texture, like the Oikos. Oikos was the first one, right, number one?
Yes, yep.
But I mean, as far as like kind of the sweetness and the strawberry flavor.
All right, Matt, so now you got to pick a winner, which is the crowned.
For me, it's between the Chobani and the Faye, I think. And I say this with questionable honesty because I don't think I've ever had Faye before today. But I'm not going to promise I haven't. Because I honestly don't remember. Like, I don't track my yogurt to that point. I know I've had Oikos. I know I've had Chobani. I've had Yoplait. The Light and Fit I probably haven't had either because that's really not the type of yogurt I go for.
For the cost of that one, too, it was like, it's kind of costly for, whatever.
But honestly, either one I would be fine with. Like, I thought they were both good. The Faye being more expensive, you know, that probably would be the point of difference for me of, like, I will go with, like, I like the taste enough of Chobani compared to the Faye that I'd be fine with just the Chobani. But I could see the Faye, like, I want to try more of it now and see other flavors, but the strawberry was, they both were good. So I guess I'll go Chobani.
All right. Sounds good. The winner, Chobani, strawberry on the bottom.
Sweet.
All right, thank you, Matt, and thank you to our listeners out there. If you want to hear us eat on the radio more, this is great radio. Please subscribe and tell a friend of a friend. It's really easy. Just search Tilth Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts. Or on an Android phone, get an app like Podcast Addict. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcast. You can also follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio. And we will post. We got some pictures of, like, yeah, just the different types of yogurts and what they look like. And
yeah.
It's interesting, just like you said, how different they looked.
Far less appetizing than a cheese plate, but...
Agreed.
Not terrible looking, but yeah. No, I think it's... I think we had to find a way to do a version of Hot Ones. You ever seen that? Where they eat hot wings? No.
Okay, whoa.
Have you ever seen Hot Ones? You know what I'm talking about?
I have not.
Okay.
I have
no idea. So Hot Ones is this, like, interview thing they do... where a guy asks questions as the celebrity or person they're interviewing eats progressively hotter wings. Like,
okay.
So then you start with, like, when you think about the Buffalo Wild Wings, right. Like, start with the mild, and then by then they're unblazing, and, you know, the mouth is burning, and they're trying to talk about their lives or whatever. And I was listening to something on the radio yesterday. They were talking about how popular that show has become, and people watch it, and it's like, yeah, how can we do an ag version of Hot Ones where we're sitting there trying to do the podcast and progressively becomes more difficult because we're eating something really spicy, or we might need the yogurt to put out the fire.
To help.
But, yeah. So eating...
What is the dairy equivalent of Hot
Ones? I don't know. I honestly don't. I feel like we have to cheat a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really... Maybe pepper jack cheese.
You could get
they do make, like, ghost pepper cheese, yeah, and other stuff, like spicy, so maybe, spicy cheese.
We have the Chipotle one, that's good. Yeah, like you say, just start with a
you know, mild cheddar or a mozzarella or something very, yeah. But anyway, it's time to get into our cool beans. That's corny, but some current events. So cool beans this week for our friends down in Iowa. Iowa has no drought. Heard that right. No drought for the first time in 4 years. The state has had its sixth wettest start to a year on record, according to Iowa State University. Heavy rainfall last week eliminated the remaining pockets of drought in Iowa, according to the latest U.S. Drought Monitor. It's the first time in nearly 4 years none of the state is experiencing drought, and marks a significant turnaround from September, when Iowa was drier than it had been in a decade. 83% of the state had drought at the start of the year, and more than a third of Iowa had extreme drought, the second-to-worst classification of the Drought Monitor. Since then, they've had the sixth wettest start to a year, according to Iowa State, and there's been an average 17 inches of rain statewide, more than 40% greater than normal. Nearly half of that rain came in May.
And so I think this speaks to more of the Midwest. We talk so much, some of those podcasts from a couple months ago did not age well because we're talking drought.
Right.
And then
but at the time, it was dry.
Right, and then May happened. And Iowa, if you remember too, was like, I wouldn't say the epicenter of the drought, but for how much corn, you know, obviously it's corn and soybeans, that's the biggest, it's just a very high producing state, so any drought there is a big deal. But what's crazy is how much we flip now. To flip that from drought to not in May is probably the worst time to flip for farmers, because
right, you're trying to get things done in the field.
You
yeah.
can't get stuff in the ground then, and you have problems, and it can't withstand the moisture, the lack of oxygen for that long, and just, yeah, you have problems. So going to be a really interesting...
Yeah, it's a double-edged sort of, like, we're happy. I pulled up the drought monitor from yesterday, and, yeah, the entire Midwest, there's pockets of abnormally dry, like in Wisconsin, it's southern part of Adams County, got their little streak through there, way north along the UP. There's some Iowa still, northeast Iowa still has some abnormally dry areas, but nothing... You know, crazy. Everything on, there's nothing above a D0. And I would say 90% of the Midwest is in none for drought. So, what a difference a year makes.
What a difference a month makes.
A month makes.
Six
yeah,
weeks. Right when you wanted to plant. So, yeah, Mario, we were talking about that earlier. You know, there's like corn planted late April when it was dry yet. you know, made it through that okay. At that time, you're like, oof, I didn't, you know, that's why more didn't go in the ground. But
yeah.
So, yes, that is there. I don't know if that's cool beans or corny. I don't know. I just kind of
I mean, it's cool beans that...
I we don't want the drought, but we didn't want it to end this way
yes.
at all.
Yep. But like we can't always have our cake and eat it, too, unfortunately. Know. So, all right, that's corny, though, this week is very scary for the people that were there. The bull known as Party Bus...
Best bull,
which sounds like an awesome bull, like the bull you would hang out with in a bar, like,
yeah.
Oh yeah, you're the bull I get to ride in this bar. Yeah, Party Bus sounds awesome, but Party Bus got a little less awesome when he jumped the fence at the rodeo and began injuring people. So now he will be forced to retire from the sport. So he injured at least three people. He was captured on video during the 84th Sisters Rodeo, jumping the fence and basically juggling a woman in the video they had on here. If you want to look at it, there is a graphic nature warning. There's no blood or anything like that, but it is the woman becomes a rag doll and is literally juggled in the air by a bull. So it's
audible. They didn't like move.
Right. No, it seems like oblivious to what was happening. It did happen fast.
Well, you recognize what you're seeing.
Right, you're like, whoa, that's weird. Why is this? What's this bull doing here?
Party like, bus, someone enjoying the party. Like, no, it's just a video you got to watch to see, like, because at any party you'd be like, well, I wanted to, you know, like,
right.
I'd have got out of the way, but yeah. And just watching the bull, like, when they have it, like, jump in the fence is wild, too. Like, it just.
I do question the plan for Party Bus. So obviously they're not going to head back. He's a bucking bull, a little too wild, so they're not going to have him part of the rodeo, so this doesn't happen again. But his retirement is to be a breeding bull for more bucking bulls. Like,
so one of the other things they said he will not breed. Like, they're not going to.
Oh, I thought I read in here what they said.
See, I thought it was the opposite of that.
So new officials said Party Bus will live out his life as a breeding bull for the next generation of bucking bulls at a ranch in northwestern U.S.
Will now breed. That's what I read.
Okay.
What are the other headlines? Because I'm like, well, I think that's awesome, Matt. I think it's like, we need more bulls. Maybe not quite this crazy, but I mean, these are bucking bulls. You can't breed out the, like,
no, I'm not saying
whatever that. Sort of, like, yeah.
No, it's just like, he's a little too athletic. Maybe a little too good genetics that he could, or maybe they just need higher fences. I don't know. But, because you don't. I guess when you think of fences, you don't think of
like
a bull clearing a fence.
No, and it's the like,
same
the,
way
what
deer.
You think of the metal. Like, it is a impressive. Like, what you'd think of a deer jumping a fence.
Right.
The bull did that over, you know, a metal gate that was, like, yeah. And you could see all the people in the crowd just stunned of, like, what, you know, what did I just see?
Yeah, maybe he's got a little bit of white-tailed deer in him. I don't know. He cleared the fence, busted out pretty fast, and I don't know, toward the tail end of the video, you can see a guy on a horse, like, trying to run him down and catch him, and a number of people chasing after it. But, you know, I've been even just, you know, county fairs and stuff where animals get loose, and especially when you get that mix of the population that never really dealt with animals, they don't know.
My dad saved my life at a county fair.
Yeah, no,
like, out of the ring, came around, like, basically where all my hands were, and I had my back to it, and, yeah, like, my dad pushed me out of the way into, like, where the other animals were, which I thought, you know, like, what are you doing? And, this
steer just ran out.
The story was always that the steer wasn't, like, correctly castrated or something.
Oh, sure.
That, I think that was just more lore over time.
It does happen, though. You do.
But I think that was, like, exaggerated. There was other ones, like, oh, it didn't get, you know, like, people that use, like, show does or whatever, like, they didn't use enough or something. I don't know what the real story was because I was a kid. But, yes, I remember somebody really, like,
got trampled, yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so, it, you know, kids and animals, man, those, they always say that's the two things you never want to work with because things can get crazy. But yeah, thankfully, sounds like most people were treated and released from the hospital that were injured, so no fatalities or anything like that. But still had to be a wild. I mean, it's going to make a great story. She probably doesn't want to talk about it now, but the lady that got juggled by the bull, like when she sees the video later, like there will be a point in your life, it may be a few years down the road, where she'll be like, that was kind of awesome. Like, it didn't feel awesome, but it looks awesome. Yeah.
No, well, just seeing the bull, like, going, you know, like, once it jumps the fence, it could, like, clear down, or, like, just out into the parking lot and stuff, and running around the tents.
Oh, yeah, there was nothing like, stopping that bull from,
right.
from taking off. So, now it's time for our Feel Good Friday, and so this week we are talking, as we opened, we'll close the show, about Breakfast on the Farm. Had a couple weeks now of some dairy breakfasts, some well-attended dairy breakfasts. The Oconto County dairy breakfast last week, 5,000 served. Outer Gamey's was around 3,400 served. And Brown County, 8,000 served. So right there, you've and maybe there are some carryovers, maybe some people that go to multiple breakfasts, but still, you're talking almost 20,000 people that...
But it
went to the farm to eat breakfast, see what farming's about. You know, there's a number of activities. Obviously, it's not just a place to, like a sit-down restaurant to come and eat, but...
I was surprised how many, though... Do you think... How many times were you were stationed, how many cow selfies were there?
A lot.
Yes.
Like a pretty constant stream of people, like, grabbing their phone, like...
just standing... Like, that... just shocked me of how many, maybe just because it used to be like the you know, they'd post on Facebook a picture of the breakfast plate, and now it must have changed to the cow selfie, because, it just seemed like while I was with you,
people were just, snapping pictures right and left. One of the cool things about Outer Gamey's, I don't know if it happened at the other two, but there was a calf born during... on the farm, like during the time, so that's always kind of cool that people get to see that process. And there was a crowd hanging out.
Yeah, there was like a crowd by the gate, like a smaller one, and then also, some of the people that run in it were over there, like kind of watching, and so it was a big crowd around watching. Yeah, some of these broke, like, from the way it sounded, and I thought Brown County's had more, but they said the last record was 4,000.
Oh, wow.
And you got to eight,
yeah.
Which is impressive. And I was at Fond du Lac County 1 year, Breakfast on the Farm at 8,000. That 8,000's, I mean, just the parking and all of the logistics of that 1,000 many people is a lot. Yeah. Because there's other people, some people come and don't even eat the breakfast, too, so that's just the amount served. Yeah. And so, yeah, that was a lot. And then O'Connor at 5,000 is even a more crazy feat. Because you're not necessarily close to a big city like Green Bay or Appleton, or like that case Fond du Lac, and so that they could pull that many people too is really neat.
Yeah, it is cool, and like we said, there's more opportunities out there if you're looking for more dairy breakfasts. Again, this weekend, Waupaca and Kewaunee for sure are having theirs, so it's a good time. I mean, there's things for the kids to do. There's usually ice cream and. As well as the breakfast.
Yeah, take your dad out.
Yeah, good Father's Day outing for the family. So, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, Todd.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
So this week we talked alfalfa weevils and things to look for and consider when looking at possibly treating your fields because of infestation. In our spotlight, we talked about a new biotech trait coming down the pipeline for SCN. Egg History Minute, we talked about the difference between Greek and regular yogurt. Then we had our yogurt tasting for our JDM Challenge number 2. Cool beans this week, no drought for the first time in 4 years in Iowa. That's corny. Party bus goes on a rampage at a rodeo and injures some people. Party bus being the bull, not somebody driving a party bus. And our Field Good Friday was big turnouts for Breakfast on the Farm this year. And hopefully we'll see that keep going. Thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.